Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ghoul Society.
That's my big sister, Jamie.
And that's my little sister, Sarah. We are grateful to be recording on the unceded, stolen territories of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations, and the Lekwungen and Wasanich peoples whose historical relations with the land continue to this day. As uninvited guests, we are committed to disrupting racism and colonial violence within ourselves, our families, and our communities. By listening to this podcast, you've officially been inducted into the Ghoul Society.
And hello.
Hello. Hi. I'm still phlegmy.
Yeah. Jamie's been sick for a while.
It's gonna be rough.
Yeah.
Sarah's in a little bit of a bad mood.
Oh my god.
She's in pain, so she's in a bad mood. We got matching tattoos yesterday.
It's our second matching tattoo.
I know. So cute.
So cute of us.
But this time, Mom's not involved.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mom. Jinx.
And she can never get it because he's not using it anymore.
Yeah. That's it. It's done.
Yeah.
Wham, bam.
Pretty
thank you, ma'am.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. So what's up with you? What else is up with you?
Nothing. Just running. My knees fucking hurt.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Even though you're going slow, right? And taking your time.
I don't... Yeah. What do people think I'm doing? Running every single day? For like 30 minutes?
No. But also, like, what's your pace like, you know? You want to make sure that you have a slow pace, too.
I feel like it's pretty freaking slow.
Okay. Yeah, it's probably fine.
Not running.
Your body's just adjusting.
Full out the whole time, though.
Yeah.
So my pace is like not prop, like it's not counted properly because I'm walking and running.
So I don't have
a proper pace for running full, like without walking intervals.
Right.
So I don't actually know what my pace will be.
Because it just takes an average over the whole time. Like it doesn't like come up on your watch as you're going?
No, it does. But I think because I'm running for such short amount of time, it's like a minute and a half of running and then 2 minutes walking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't actually know my proper pace of a full like 5K run yet.
Right.
Or like even just 2 kilometers without walking.
Yeah. Okay. I see.
Until like for like quite a few more weeks until I actually start doing long runs.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But I think it's pretty good. Like, my lungs feel good.
Yeah, that's great.
It's just that my knees are starting to hurt.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, ow, my knees hurt.
Oh.
And I could go longer. My lungs are like, yay.
Yeah.
And my knees are like, you need to go home and put, go rest.
Oh, man.
But I'm working on it, so it's okay.
Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yippee.
Yeah, that and... just trying to read and do podcast, and that's it.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's
what
great.
About you? How's school? You're back.
I'm back in full swing. School is going well. It is not as rigorous as last semester, thank
God. Yay! What?
Woot woot. Which is great, and yeah, that's pretty much it. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. I mean, we hung out all day yesterday getting our tattoos. So
So we're kind of out of new things.
Yeah. Out of the new.
And then we also got takeout and it was really yummy.
Yeah. Mine was so good.
Mine was
I
so
still
good
have
too.
Half of mine.
And then I watched Bob's Burgers because I was too hangry to talk to Bristol.
Oh. Montana and I watched Community. So
nice. Have you restarted? Like, to watch the whole thing again?
Yeah, I'm on the last season.
Ah, that's crazy. I love Community. I'm trying to get Bristol to watch that, too.
He's never seen it?
I don't think so.
But he'll, like... Oh, actually, you can't watch a Dungeons & Dragons episode anymore. Only the second one, not the first one.
What?
Because they do blackface.
Oh. What the fuck?
Yeah, remember Chang?
What?
Chang is, like, an elf. He's a dark elf, and he does blackface in
it. Oh my god.
Yeah, so you can't watch it. It's not on streaming anymore.
That's unhinged.
Yeah, they cut it, like,
I think I remember.
It's really bad because they cut it, like, not that long ago. Oof. From streaming services.
Yeah, because Community isn't that old, so they also made that episode not that long ago.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Way to go, Community.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, so they cut that. But you can watch the there's a second one.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I love the, like, winter claymation episodes. Yeah. Those are my favorite.
Yeah, they're that one's so good. The paintball.
Always paintball, yeah.
The paintball ones are my favorite.
Yeah.
I think I like the second paintball one more. Because mm-hmm. it's Old West, and then it turns into yes, Star Wars.
Yes. Oh, my God. That's so, so good. It's so good.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, Community shout out.
Yeah.
Boxburgers shout out. Yeah. We've been watching our comfort shows, so.
Yeah, that's what winter is for. Watching your comfort shows, eating your comfort foods.
Getting tattoos.
Getting tattoos.
Which are not comfortable.
No.
It hurts so much. And that's my, like, 12th tattoo or something. Yeah. But, like, holy.
You have your ribs tattooed, bro.
I know. And that, this hurt more. My inner elbow. No, it did not. Yeah, it did. Yeah, way more.
Than your ribs?
Yeah.
Shit, man.
Yeah. I know. Ooh. Anyway, what do you got for me today?
So, today, I thought I'd go a little more lighthearted because we've been pretty intense lately and my next one is going to be pretty intense. So,
okay.
Today I thought we'd talk about the history of Pioneer Square.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because in Victoria?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sitting on the corner of Mears Street and Quadra Street beside the Anglican Christ Church Cathedral is Pioneer Square. It has winding paths, a bike trail that passes it, and beautiful trees alongside some tombs and headstones that are from Victoria's history. It is considered to be the most significant colonial-era cemetery in BC. Yeah.
Okay.
I know. But also, like, it's not even a cemetery anymore, so that doesn't make sense.
Wait, the one across from the YMCA?
Mm-hmm.
It is a cemetery.
Yeah, but not fully.
No, but there's graves there.
Yeah, like a lot. But you'll know what I mean by not really.
Okay. It's a fake cemetery?
No, it's not a fake. Let me get into it. It was established in 1855 after the closure of the Fort Victoria graveyard, which was closed due to flooding, which we'll return to in a bit.
Mm-hmm. I think, did we talk about that?
I think we talked about it.
Because the A&W...
It's not A&W, it's Burger King.
Oh, Burger King.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, what? Oh, yeah.
We were literally just above there. We were just there, yeah. Yesterday.
And we saw ghosts. No, we didn't. I'm just joking.
And the graveyard, it used to be called the Old Burying Ground or the Old Burial Ground. It closed in 1873 after Ross Bay Cemetery opened.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. So this park is said to be a direct link to Victoria's colonial years, obviously, and it illustrates the importance of the Wakefield system, which was used during colonization, which is a controlled system of land development, quote unquote, more like land stealing, by providing areas of land and setting them aside for public use.
Mm.
That's what the Wakefield system is.
Okay.
And that was the template and the ultimate development of Victoria's structure as a city. So they were like, this area of land is going to be for this, and this area of land is going to be for this.
It's actually really interesting because it makes sense then why, like, Victoria is so beautiful. Because there's a lot of green spaces,
mm-hmm.
like a lot of kind of reserved public spaces.
Yeah.
Though, obviously, we know that all these lands were stolen. And they're being improperly used, and they're unceded, and they have not been given back yet.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of really beautiful spaces.
Yeah. Yeah. If you haven't understood or grasped the concept by now, this story that I'm covering is a full colonial story. It's just about the times of colonization, and I'm going to talk about some Indigenous stuff at the end as well.
Okay.
But just so everyone knows.
Good warning.
In August of 1856, construction of the Victoria District Church, now known as Christ Church Cathedral, was completed atop Churchill.
Like John Churchill? Winston Churchill?
Oh, actually, that would be funny. It's two words, Churchill, but it might be from that. Hmm. While the church was under construction, the first known burial took place in February of 1855 in a small area of land next to it, which followed what James Douglas envisioned, which is that burying grounds would be laid out beside churches.
Yeah.
And not just random areas.
Yeah, checks out.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. The area was formally staked out in May of 1855 by surveyor B.W. Peirce, who set half of the area for Catholics and the other half for Anglicans. And the entire cemetery is barely half a city block, but they thought it would be big enough for the population of Fort Victoria at the time.
What? It's yeah. So small.
Even though the old cemetery in the Johnson Ravine was full of bodies already, and they were being washed away due to flooding.
Yeah.
So they had to reallocate those bodies somewhere, and they were like, this little piece of land should do fine for everybody in the city.
Wow, wow.
Yeah. Apparently, for a while, the cemetery didn't have a formal name until citizens adopted the name Quadra Street Cemetery.
Hmm.
And then Old Burial Ground. Hmm. And then Pioneer Square.
Wow, okay. Mm-hmm. Name changes. What's up?
Yeah. In 1860, George Hills arrived at Fort Victoria as the first Anglican bishop. Because the burying ground was so close to the Anglican church, about, like, not even a block away.
Isn't it right beside it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
In the picture, there's, like, some drawings of what it used to look like, and it looks further away.
Hmm. Oh.
So I wonder if it was actually...
Moved it again.
No, I wonder if it was just, like, cut in half to, like, build Mears Street and then Fort Street. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was probably longer.
Right.
And then they were just like, no.
Yeah.
Bishop Hills believed, like many others, that he had a claim to the graveyard because he was a bishop.
Okay.
So he did this placing his own house and garden on church reserve property beside the south end of the burying ground and had a fence erected around everything. So classic colonization. He was just like, this is mine now.
Okay.
He was like, that church, I'm the bishop of it, and I'm gonna put my house like pretty far away from the church, and I'm just gonna block off the whole area leading up to the church, and that will be the cemetery.
The audacity. The white male audacity.
I know, right? But it's my church's cemetery. No one else can be there.
Okay.
This obstructed hearse access to the gate, which was built for the Catholic Church 4 years earlier. Reportedly, Bishop Hills installed a new gate for Catholics on the north side of the grounds, but didn't notify Catholic Bishop Demers, and water made that road really bad and muddy, and so often the Catholics, quote, had to take the coffin out of the hearse and carry it a distance of about an acre, end quote, through Anglican Bishop Hill's yard.
Oh my god.
Into the cemetery to bury it.
Yep. Checks out.
Mm-hmm. In May of 1861, Bishop Demers won a lawsuit in the Supreme Court of Vancouver Island to gain unobstructed access to the burying ground. So this refuted the idea that the Anglican church was the, quote, established church, end quote, on Vancouver Island.
Mm-hmm.
And proof that the burying ground was Victoria's public cemetery.
Right. Because isn't that what it was supposed to be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the churches were fighting over it.
Oh my god. Not surprised.
Yeah, right. The old burial ground, now known as Pioneer Square, initially had designated sections for Anglicans, Catholics, and Royal Navy people, but diversified as the city's population did. An influx of settlers from the 1858 Fraser Gold Rush resulted in an area of the cemetery for the Chinese community, which was ever growing in Victoria. And they were given their own kind of section.
Hmm.
Beside this area was allocated also to Hawaiian settlers, apparently.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So, and there was Presbyterian, Methodist, Baptist, and Congregationalists also had areas allocated to them.
Just throw them all together.
Yeah, but like it was like
separated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to note that is very likely that the Chinese community had their own section of the burial ground, not only because they had their own burying practices and culture, but also because the 1800s was full of racist white colonists who probably had an issue being buried to people of other ethnic backgrounds.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Makes sense. We should also do a history episode on the Chinese cemetery that's
Well, guess what?
You did?
I kind of learned about it.
Yay!
So, on a side story of history, the section in the old burial ground for people of Chinese descent to lay people to rest occurred only temporarily. Mm-hmm. Chinese immigrants believed that one soul would hover over their tomb after death, and they believed that those who were buried away from their village of origin would be homeless in a sense. Mm-hmm. So Chinese residents organized shanteng, which are charity societies, to collect the bones of dead people and ship them back to China so that their souls could rest in their village of origin.
I heard about that.
Mm-hmm. In 1887, there were 11 shanteng in Victoria.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot, actually.
I know. So this is how it went. 7 years after someone died, their grave would be dug up, their bones would be cleaned, dried, and packed into a crate labeled with their name, birth, and death dates, and their village in China.
Wow.
And they'd be shipped back and then buried over there so that their soul could rest.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Once the old burial ground became too full, Chinese residents were buried in Ross Bay. And due to racism, they were buried closest to the sea along with indigenous people. So this area of Ross Bay would often flood when the weather was bad, and it was even hit by like huge waves during storms.
Whoa. Wait, I can't even imagine that.
I think
before the road was there?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I don't think that the road always used to be there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so there's bodies under the road.
Probably. Yeah. There's probably bodies under the road. In addition to that, rather than being identified by name, people were listed as, quote, Chinaman number one, end quote, and so on.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Love it.
Despite this overwhelming racism, the Chinese Victorians built an altar in this area of Ross Bay in the 1880s. And so after some time, the Chinese Consolidated Benevolent Association began looking for a better plot of land for a Chinese cemetery. In 1891, they bought some land near what is now known as Christmas Hill, out by Swan Lake, I think.
But, oh.
Yeah. But they were prevented from carrying out burials due to threats and racism of neighboring farms.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. In addition to that, strong winter storms in the year of 1901 washed away bones that were buried at Ross Bay. And so the association decided they didn't have time to deal with the racist farmers and the bones being washed away
mm-hmm.
at Ross Bay. So they sold the farmland near Christmas Hill. And then in 1903, they bought land at Fowl Point.
Okay.
So this
was where it is still today.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this was the first cemetery for the sole use of Chinese residents. And they built an altar and a brick house for storage of exhumed bodies that were placed into crates to be ready to be shipped to China.
Mm.
And so it was at that point when Fowl Point became Chinese Point.
Oh,
and
I didn't know that.
Yeah. In 1909, the CCBA took over the shipment of bones for the shanteng and sent a collection of crates to China every 7 years, except for during wartime. Probably because they weren't allowed.
Yeah, yeah.
And records.
Resources.
Yeah. And records show that the CCBA handled the remains of Chinese residents from varying Canadian cities, not just Victoria.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the crate shipments continued until 1949, when the establishment of the People's Republic of China no longer made this possible.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that's why it stopped.
Yeah.
Whoa, they were like, we're not going to keep accepting bodies.
Yeah, I guess they were just like, hey, we can't do this anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's so wild.
In the 1920s and 30s, local residents freaking people thought the site should turn to urban development and claimed what? It was a quote health hazard end quote.
What? Yeah, they claimed a cemetery was a health hazard, but there's all these other cemeteries around.
I don't know, white people, racism.
Holy shit.
So this was actually rejected by the provincial medical health officer. They cool. were just like, not a health hazard. Y'all are crazy.
Yeah, stop You're, being Karens.
Yeah, it's just a cemetery.
Yeah.
And so it was actually at this time that Chinese Point was renamed to Harling Point after a guy named Fred Harling, who died attempting to rescue people off this point during a storm in 1934.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Holy. Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
Got swept away by the sea. So oh, they God. Renamed it Harling Point.
Whoa. It's a rocky area, too.
Yeah. So in conclusion, the Chinese cemetery was closed in 1950, and Chinese residents began to choose Royal Oak Burial Park for their tombs.
Hmm.
And wherever else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's a very short history of the Chinese cemetery.
Wow, nice. Mm-hmm. Good job.
To continue on with Pioneer Square, each church in Victoria during the 1850s, yeah, kept their own burial registers, which is a list of those who were part of their congregation who were buried in the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
In records kept by St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church between 1855 and 1872, there are 630 entries in the Anglican Register, 223 in the Roman Catholic Register, and 88 in the Presbyterian Register.
That's a lot of people, but yeah. It's actually not that many people.
Yeah, but that's just those registers.
Wait.
There's other ones,
wait,
too.
Wait, wait, wait. That's just in that that's block? Just,
yes, that's just Anglican, wait, Roman what? Catholic, and Presbyterian. That's not including other denominations.
Wait.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't wait. Understand. This plot of land is so small.
How actually, though?
I don't know.
Was it bigger? And now so. There's just bodies underneath, like, monks art supplies and like
probably
that section and all the houses that are back in there too.
Yeah, so in addition to that, in 1859 they moved graves from the old Fort Victoria graveyard on Johnson to the old burial ground on Quadra.
I'm so confused.
I know,
that's so they just many were, people
I know, like, why are they stacking them on top of each other? I don't know.
They must be.
Something fishy is going on. So these graves, well, actually, I feel like not all of them were even graves, because back then a lot of people couldn't even afford coffins. So,
right.
Think of how many bones are under Johnson.
Just in the ground. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, the graves were moved. So there was a petition made by people who complained of the cemetery on Johnson Street, probably because it smelled gross over there and there was bones poking out of the ground everywhere, and anytime it would flood, I don't know, maybe a skull got carried down the ravine. You know,
yeah,
like, you know, how many times do you think that happened?
A lot, probably. Yeah.
So people were like, no.
No,
we need
thank
to
you.
Move this cemetery to somewhere else. And also, the transfer of these graves and bodies into other cemeteries, like the old burial ground, was done by slaves in the dark.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it took years.
Yeah, I fucking bet it took years. Mm-hmm. God, that's awful work.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
So that's what they were forced to do.
Holy shit.
Two headstones from this period survived the move, because most of the ones that were moved were broken.
Yeah.
In the move.
Yeah. Checks out.
So two survived and are reported to be the oldest known headstones in BC.
Whoa.
One is Eliza Kennedy, who died in 1850, and the other is Sarah Jane Finlayson, who died in 1853.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So by the 1860s, Victoria's population continued growing, and it kind of became inevitable that Pioneer Square would be too full. And also during this time, it became super neglected because they stopped burying people there. So it got so bad that in May of 1861, Reverend J.B. Good wrote a letter to the Colonist paper, the Times Colonist, regarding the state of the burial ground. He'd been asked to conduct a burial service and was completely appalled by what he saw and smelled.
What?
Quote, I unhesitatingly pronounce the cemetery to be worthy of a distinguished place in the catalog of public nuances, end quote. He said the cemetery pronounced itself, quote, in a manner startling to some other senses than the olfactory of those whose fate it is to live in its more immediate neighborhood, end quote. So essentially, it fucking stank.
Holy shit. Wait, like, how? Just because the bodies weren't being buried properly and they weren't in caskets?
Well, so part of it, and he pointed this out too, is that the worst part is that the ground is sloped.
Mm-hmm.
So the rainwater goes down into other plots.
Mm-hmm.
And so at first, the people were buried like at the top of the slope. And then as it got more full, they were having to bury people in the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And so rainwater would just like collect there and it would be super mucky and they'd have to like dig. Like,
so it's like body soup at the bottom.
I mean,
of the
essentially,
slope.
Yeah.
Like swamp body
kind
soup.
Of. I mean, fuck? Kind of.
Okay.
And so Reverend J.B. Good said, quote, you have only to open a grave in winter in the lower part to find out the mischief. The stench and effluvia is so great that the section declares he had to consume an unwanted amount of tobacco to enable him at all to complete the necessary excavation, end quote. So the guy who, the gravedigger,
yeah,
he had to like chew and smoke a bunch of tobacco so that his senses were full of tobacco.
Holy.
While digging graves.
Oh my god. Because they put like over 1,000 bodies in like half a block of space.
Yeah, I still don't
a
understand.
A quarter of a block. It's not even half.
I know.
It must be different though, because the one, like the area I'm thinking about isn't sloped at all. It's flat.
I think it used to be sloped.
Interesting.
I don't know if it was sloped towards like Fort or if it's sloped towards like YMCA.
I bet you it was sloped towards Fort and that the graveyard actually went like
I think
beyond
it did.
Like maybe even to Yates or something.
Probably.
Because that would make sense. That kind of goes down.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that gross?
And then what? They just covered it and then they cemented over it and they were like, well, bodies in there.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So 7 years later, a public meeting was held to improve the condition of the cemetery because wandering animals and vandals kept pushing monuments over, and unchecked vegetation was beginning to engulf the grounds.
Wandering animals were pushing.
That's what the article said.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, animals rub against things and they're itchy.
Yeah. And that is true. That does kind of make sense.
Fragile tombstones just broke.
Yeah.
So a few citizens created a fund for the burial ground, and by January of 1870, they raised $438.
Which is how much in today's
money.
I
forgot to look it up.
That's in what year? What year is that?
1870.
Okay, $438 in 1870 is probably $15,000 today, which does not seem like enough money to deal with the situation that they have on their hands.
I know. Okay, what did you say?
I said 15,000.
10,000.
What?
They're like, we got 10 grand, essentially, and we're gonna fix the burial ground, y'all.
Whoa. And who is this? Sorry, just some
just
civilians?
Some people, like rich. I don't know if they were rich people, but like
they
prominent
don't
sound people.
Very rich.
Like prominent people. Yeah. Like, we need to raise money for the prominent. Cemetery. Prominent.
Prominent.
So they raise this money to gravel paths, replace the gate, and plant some shrubs and trees. in the cemetery.
Holy, yep, they fixed it.
They also requested that the government appoint some trustees to ensure that the cemetery would be kept in order in the future. Which is now, if you think about it.
It's true.
We're in the future.
We're in the future.
During 1868, though, another problem besides the condition was brought before the city council. Drainage. Graves would fill with water as they were being dug, I guess.
What?
Yeah. So a committee, like, the drainage in this area just sucked ass.
Well, yeah. The
it just wasn't a thing.
It makes sense. There's, like, no drainage anywhere. This whole island is soaking wet at all times.
Yeah. So a committee recommended that box drains be put in, but they instead put one large drain in. And they were like, this is fine because we're going to stop burying people as soon as another suitable burying ground comes along.
And at this time, Ross Bay didn't exist yet.
Not yet. Right? Okay. They were like, we need a burial ground further away from the city center because this is getting a little crazy and stinky.
Yeah.
Even though drainage was an issue, the city didn't really continue care of the burial ground, despite being told by the provincial government to do so. They were just like, whatever.
Wow.
And from 1899 to 1907, a bunch of newspaper articles and letters made out to city council were criticizing the neglect and the decay of the burial ground. And eventually, city council was convinced to construct a plan to improve the grounds.
Oh, good.
So this included that the burying ground should be transferred from provincial to civic ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Because the province wasn't doing jack shit.
Yep. Too busy.
Inventory and planning of existing graves should be made. They're like, we need to draw this out. Because it wasn't drawn out. There were no plots.
Let's actually plan something for once.
The overgrowth was to be removed. And all monuments and stones were to be relocated to the eastern edge. And they were going to put in a memorial fountain in the middle of the area.
Oh, yeah. That's still there.
So they did part of that, but not all of it. So they started doing this in 1908, but they didn't finish. This is around the time that the name was changed to Pioneer Square as well, because it essentially became an Edwardian park.
Okay.
And that's what it is now, a park.
Yep, it's a park.
What was completed to help the area left it as a grassy lawn,
mm-hmm.
except for a few large monuments.
Yeah.
Around half of the estimated grave markers and fragments were taken away or buried, and all grave fences were removed.
Okay.
8 of the tallest monuments were left, 6 tombs were left, but 19 were dismantled, and their tops were placed flat in the ground to form an outer semicircle of a new grouping on the eastern edge of the park, which is what's there today.
Yeah.
Okay. And so in total, about 100 in total were placed. So those technically aren't real graves. They just placed their tombs there.
Wow. They're the just top doing of some surface level work here.
Yeah.
There's still thousands of bodies.
Under the park.
What the fuck?
Yeah. I know.
Holy.
So there's no record for the placement of these monuments, but preference was given to those that were grand in size or design.
Mm-hmm.
So only the pretty ones were kept.
Right.
And like famous people back then.
Yeah.
Or those that were least damaged.
Were the animals, apparently.
And wandering animals.
The wandering animals.
An Anglican clergyman who was born in Victoria and moved to England as a boy wrote to the Times Colonist in 1901 after visiting Victoria again. He said, this is funny. Looking up a street to the right, I caught sight of an obelisk in the distance. There's the old cemetery, I thought, and I will go and visit my mother's grave.
Oh, shit.
On getting nearer, I nearly gasped with dismay. There was no cemetery, but a sort of people's park. Keep off the grass.
Oh my god.
A few monuments in bad repair were standing here and there, but the grave that had been one of the chief objects of my pilgrimage was nowhere to be seen. Noticing what seemed to be a stonemason's yard on the far side of the ground, I went over to investigate and there discovered a collection of woebegone monuments.
Oh my God.
Symmetrically arranged like the books on the round table of a lodging house parlor. And among these was a large flat stone recording the burial of Elizabeth Caroline Alston in 1865. I was assured afterwards by those in authority that the best had been made of a bad job, but the reader will perhaps sympathize with the resentment that I felt at what seemed and still seems to be the unnecessary removal of a monument of considerable size and solidity, though others had been left untouched, and the banishment of the inscribed stone to the melancholy collection aforesaid. I marvel that the place where the bodies of so many Victorian pioneers have been laid to rest should have been allowed by the present generation to fall in such a state as to warrant the drastic action of the city fathers.
Holy, yeah, because, like, they didn't tell anybody. They didn't say, like, oh, hey, your family member's buried here and we got to do some work.
Yeah.
And we're going to turn it into a park. And then they also took the, like, larger grave markers.
Yeah.
And just chopped off the top of them and then just reburied the top of them.
Yeah.
Without telling anybody.
So this guy's mom is probably just in the park somewhere.
Somewhere. Holy.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
He was like, I'm going to go visit mom.
No.
What the fuck is this? Hello? Where's my mother's tomb?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's kind of sad.
It's really sad, yeah.
It's so fucked up.
Yeah.
So the cleanup project proved to be super controversial to other people in the city and led to the resignation of the superintendent of parks, D.D. England.
Wow.
But criticism didn't stop when he resigned. Many journalists and authors throughout the 1920s and well into the 50s wrote articles condemning the cleanup, but nothing else was done about it. In 1938, a memorial cross from Vimy Ridge was placed where a fountain was meant to go in the burial ground to honor those who died in France during World War I. In 1951, this cross was replaced by a granite Celtic cross, which is, I'm pretty sure, the same one that's there today.
Mm-hmm.
Alas, I can picture it. Time continued and the criticism of the grounds did not stop. Well, wow. Into the 1980s,
whoa,
monuments holy. That crumbled or were toppled over were taken away and thrown out.
Wow.
But by the mid-80s, the Parks and Recs Department of Victoria recognized the importance of keeping the grave markers and began to store them somewhere.
Okay.
In the museum, maybe? I don't know.
In the basement? In the tunnels?
Well, so they're really, like, they were given to the Old Cemetery Society, so who knows where they are? I don't know where they are. In the early 90s, the Old Cemetery Society was given permission to remove most of the remaining monuments and put them into storage. So really, a lot of these tombstones are in storage.
Like, how?
Why?
How are they allowed to do
that? I don't know.
I don't understand.
I don't know.
I don't get it.
The locations of most of the 1,300 graves are unknown.
Oh my God.
So you're walking over hundreds of bodies when you're visiting the park.
Yeah.
Kind of creepy, kind of rude.
Yeah.
As it sits now, it continues to be a park in a square that people walk through. Although a lot of people don't like to go there anymore.
Yeah.
Because some drug use going on there now. But it's very pretty.
Yeah. It's spooky.
When the sun's out.
Yeah. It's a spooky park.
It is a spooky park.
But that could, like, yeah, the spookiness could just be because a lot of houseless people are living there.
Yeah.
And not that houseless people are spooky, but sometimes people that are using drugs are unpredictable.
Yeah.
And that can be spooky when you are a lone woman
walking
at night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, totally. I've walked through there at night a handful of times and I've been totally fine.
Yeah.
But it just has a spooky aura to it.
Yeah, maybe because the path you're walking on
has
just
1,300 bodies below it.
They're just there.
They're just hanging out.
Yeah.
That's
and there's
so
no record
wild.
Of, like, there's no
like
record
who?
Of the plotting. There's no written record of the plotting.
How did they even continue to put bodies in if they didn't have, like, a proper formation?
I don't know. They just did it.
Because then that means, like, that they were just like, well, we'll try to dig here and hopefully we don't hit any other skeletons. I mean,
like, there were, like, a lot of people had headstones or, like, some kind of marker, but there was no written record of, like, these... Like, now, cemeteries have, like, paper copies.
Yeah, probably digital. Probably, like, 3D map bullshit.
Of all of the plots. Right. Who's buried where. It's all labeled and named and all that stuff.
Yeah, I'd hope so.
And back then, they were just like, yeah, this grave is here, so maybe 3 feet to the right. It's probably good.
It's probably good enough.
Yeah.
Wowie.
So... Because of its age, Pioneer Square holds many prominent people there. Here's a couple that you probably know and some you don't know. John Helmickin, a physician who was the founding president of the BC Medical Association.
Wow.
Pretty cool. He was buried here after... He was buried in Pioneer Square after Ross Bay opened because he joined his wife in their family plot.
Ah.
56 and it was actually years marked. After her death. Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that kind of cute?
Helmickin's kind of like Heimlich.
It is kind of like Hannah Estes, who was a slave from Missouri, whose husband Howard Estes bought their and their daughter's, Sylvia's, freedom for over $4,000 in 1852.
Whoa!
After a lengthy battle with the person who owned him.
Holy
Tom
shit.
Estes. So Tom, the slave owner.
Ugh.
Made a deal with Howard that he would give him his freedom for $1,000.
Okay.
So Howard worked in gold mines that Tom's sons were overseeing in California. Once he had the money, Tom refused to sign Howard's freedom papers.
Fucking course.
Howard was able to make another $1,000, so he has $2,000 now. He sent it directly to a man named Charles Leopold, who owned his wife and his daughter. So Charles let... Like, signed Hannah and Sylvia's freedom papers.
Mm-hmm.
They're free. Howard's still not free. Tom won't sign his papers.
That's so fucked up.
Tom attempted to claim the money as his, but Charles saw Howard as a free man.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wait, who's Charles? Sorry.
The slave owner of Howard's wife and daughter.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He sets them free. Tom, who is Howard's slave owner, he's like, that's my money. Charles is like, no, Howard is a free man.
Yeah.
Even though his papers weren't signed. So Tom then, so white man Tom sues white man Charles.
Okay.
And he, I guess, got money. Like, he won, but he was also forced to sign Howard's freedom papers.
Okay.
I don't know how that
worked. Weird.
So the final cost for Howard and his family's freedom was $4,000.
In 18 what?
1852-ish.
Okay, that's like $30,000.
Yeah.
Maybe. If 400 was 10,000.
I know, right?
That's like $100,000.
And that was in 1870, and this is like 1855, maybe.
Oh my god.
Yeah. $145,000.
Holy shit.
That's how much Howard got.
Holy shit.
He worked his fucking ass off in these mines and was like, I'm gonna be free, my wife and kid are gonna be free.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow.
So... They bought a 40-acre farm in Missouri.
Wow.
But they were chased out by the KKK.
Oh my fucking god. These guys cannot get a break.
I know. So
and they're working so hard.
I know.
And they have so much money.
Yeah. Whoa. So they went west via the Oregon Trail and landed in California. And then from there, they came to Victoria in 1859. So here, Howard purchased 125 acres in central Saanich and worked the land until 1857.
Holy smokes.
Mm-hmm.
What a guy. Cool guy.
Oh, maybe 1867. Yeah, I think it's 67. Shortly afterwards, Hannah died and Howard moved to Salt Spring Island where he lived with his daughter Sylvia and her kids.
Wow.
Until their deaths.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that family is still on Salt Spring, like the lineage.
Probably.
That's really amazing.
Yeah, and there's like a whole bunch of articles about Sylvia and her life on Salt Spring Island too.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
I thought that was really cool. I was like, who's this Hannah Estes woman? And then I was like, holy shit.
That is a story.
Right.
We'll put the links for those stories in the show notes.
Yes. Charles Ross was buried there. We know him.
We know him.
We know him because of his wife, Isabella Mainville Ross.
That's right.
Shout out to her. Adelaide Griffin, who died in 1861, and people claim to see her spirit as a shimmering white woman.
Aww.
That's like the only ghost that I...
Whoa. Yeah. Adelaide.
Yeah. Damn. What a name, hey?
We're going to the Adelaide Parade, Adelaide.
The Jameson brothers, Smith, Archibald, and James. Smith passed first when his steam wheeler ship blew up on the Fraser River in 1861. Archibald and James passed 4 months later when their steamer exploded in the Victoria Harbor. Yeah.
Sorry.
This family is cursed with steamers.
I don't mean to laugh, but like they all
died on steamers. That's why I included them.
Yeah. Wow.
Apparently they had two other brothers who died in a steamboat accident too.
What?
And then they had one surviving brother, and he survived because...
He's like, I'm not going on a fucking steamship.
He became a clergyman. He's like, fuck a steamer. I'm going to work
That's
for the
right.
church.
Yes. Smart man.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So I'd like to finish by saying that I couldn't find any information regarding Indigenous peoples and or Indigenous burials in this area.
Mm-hmm.
The only part was that... at some point, Indigenous peoples were buried in Ross Bay.
Hmm.
That's really it. But I was able to find out that what is now Beacon Hill used to be used by the Indigenous communities in the area for their burials.
Hmm.
So Lekwungen peoples would build burial cairns using boulders to surround and lay upon their deceased. But according to BeaconHillParkHistory.org, they stopped using what is now Beacon Hill as a cemetery ground in the 1840s because of colonization.
Right.
So they didn't stop using it. They were forced.
Yeah. That's right. Also, did you know the name for Beacon Hill is Megan?
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And then some other prominent areas that were used for Indigenous burials are Rocky Point Peninsula and the Uplands.
Hmm.
And you can actually still see some, I guess.
Cairns?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like in some rocky areas.
Hmm. That's really cool.
And, but although a lot of them have been demolished over time, and that actually happened in Beacon Hill Park.
Right.
There were a couple cairns and some city workers just like moved the boulders. And then... Some archaeologists. Well, and then archaeologists were like, "What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, why are you doing that?"
Yeah.
And then so they like rebuilt them.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's really good, all the information that I could find about Indigenous burials, kind of like in the area.
Yeah, probably because they weren't allowed to be buried at Pioneer Square.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of their, like, burial traditions are probably just, like, orally passed or, like, passed by doing it.
Mm-hmm. So, and also, they probably wouldn't, I mean, who knows, but they might, some of them might not want to be buried on, like, consecrated ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, there's that, as well.
Yeah. So, but that is the story of Pioneer Square.
Wow.
Pretty morbid.
Yeah.
But...
kind of crazy.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening, everyone. If you have any questions or comments or concerns, or if you have any corrections as well,
yeah,
we're open to those, of course, as always. You can email us at ghoulsocietypod@gmail.com, or you can DM us on Instagram at ghoulsocietypod.
All of our resources and trigger warnings can be found in each episode's show notes.
and we will see you guys next time. Bye.
Oh God, it's gonna be a rough, bumpy, crumpy, grumpy cat episode.
The more you say I'm grumpy, the grumpier I get.
I know. I'm sorry. It's okay. You're allowed to be grumpy.